Hello.
Hello.
Hi, this is Susan.
Hi, Susan.
Who's this?
This is Pat House.
Hi, Pat. How are you?
I'm good. How are you?
Good. And are there other folks on the line?
There's a bunch of us here.
Yes.
Good. They had me in some little place, and it just kept playing music and music and music, so I called back. Can I just ask, is Kathy on the line?
I don't think so.
Okay. Who else is there, then?
Kathy McIntosh is.
One at a time.
I'm Joanne Jackson from New Jersey Child Wealth Training Academy.
Oh, hi, Joanne. I'm glad you could make the call.
Thank you so much for getting the material to me.
No problem.
Ardell Nelson, Idaho.
Judy Rutan, Central California Training Academy.
Great.
Denise Rouse.
Excuse me. Go ahead.
Denise Rouse from Mississippi Department of Human Services Training Director.
Great.
Kay Osborne from Indiana.
Hi, Kay.
Hi, Kay.
Hi.
Ardell Nelson from Idaho.
Hi, how are you doing, Ardell?
Good.
Good. Anyone
Jerry
else?
Jerry Sopko, Pennsylvania.
Hi, Jerry. How you doing?
Good, Sue.
And this is Kathy Jones Kelly.
Kathy, your voice is the one I wanted to hear. Not that anybody else is not important. Everybody is important. But when your presenter hasn't identified yet, your heart's going to everybody that's a trainer knows that. Okay. Hi, Kathy.
For some reason, I had to wait and then give somebody the code number.
I had to wait, too. I was sitting in some music space for about 10 minutes.
Yeah, that's what happened to me.
And I've asked my Marty to go out and call Genesis and let them know that this can't be. They need to speed up the. I don't know that this will work. Who else is on the line?
This is
Bruce from Rhode Island.
Hi, Bruce. Glad to have you with us.
Lori.
Yeah, Greg Castillo from Seattle's Children Academy.
Hey, Greg. Nice to hear your voice.
Yeah, thanks.
Donna Spear and Larry Dean from Alabama.
Hi, Donna. Hi, Larry. Glad you're on the call.
Thanks.
Pennsylvania Child Welfare Program. There's a lot of us here.
Welcome.
Hey, everybody. It's John Rubin.
Hi, John.
Hi, John. Sounds like you've got a fan club.
It's John.
And Susan, this is Kathy McIntosh from Topeka.
Hi, Kathy.
All
welcome.
Of me is here.
Good. Anyone else?
Sally from Michigan.
Hi, how are you?
Good.
Anybody else on the call that wants to identify themselves?
Hi, this is Jeff Adams from Missouri's Children's Division.
Oh, hi, Jeff. Glad you could make it.
Thanks. Glad to be here.
Hi, Sue. It's Melody Rowe. I'm not sure if you knew I'd joined. But
I didn't. Hi, Melody. We seem to be having some issues with Genesis. Melody, did you just join?
I did.
How long did you have to wait?
About 3 minutes.
Yeah, that's okay. Marty's trying to get them to speed up the process, but thanks for that news.
Sure.
Okay. Anyone else?
This is Valerie Harvey from the state of Louisiana.
Hi, Valerie.
Hi.
Glad you're on the line.
How are you?
Good, thanks. Hold on 1 second. Yeah. There's a 3 minute wait for people coming in, though. If they could speed that up, that would be great. Okay. Thank you for joining us, Valerie. We're trying to get Genesis to move people through the queue a little faster.
Okay.
Did you have to wait a while?
No, I just got on.
Oh, good, good. This is good news. Maybe they are putting people through faster. I'm going to keep asking for a couple of minutes if other people have joined us, and then we're going to start the call. This is Susan Kanak. Has anybody joined us that hasn't identified themselves yet?
Yes, this is Patty Beekman from IHS.
Hi, Patty. How are you?
Hi.
Hi. This is Mayra Julio Nunez calling from New York City, and I have with me Doreen Bernsteiner and Egna Perez.
Thank you very much for joining the call.
Thank you for having us.
Hi, Susan. This is Dick Dean from Minnesota. Sorry,
hey,
I'm late.
That's okay. Good to hear your voice. Dick, how long did it take you to get through the Genesis thing?
The Genesis thing?
Dialing in.
Oh, not at all. It was 40 seconds, 45.
For me, too. Dick, this is Patty Beekman. Hi.
Patty, how are you?
I'm good. How are you?
This is old home week for Patty and I, by the way.
Well, that's, we're always happy to rekindle old relationships. That's one of our services we provide, Dick.
Well,
I'm delighted to do
that. Thank you very much. Appreciate that.
Anyone else on the call that wants to identify themselves? Okay. More folks are still dialing in. But it seems like we've got a wonderful group of people to start our call with. I would like to ask everyone to mute their phones, except Kathy.
This is how you mute? Let's see.
And one of the ways to mute your phone is to hit *6.
Okay.
And try that. And later on in the call, Kathy will open up the conversation for questions and answers, and to unmute your phone, you hit *6 also. So this is Susan Kanak. I'm from the National Child Welfare Resource Center for Organizational Improvement at the Muskie School of Public Service in Portland, Maine, and I'm glad you could join our call today. This is our third Peer Training Network call of 2008, and the topic is classroom training and beyond. Because there are some new people on the call today, I want to take just a minute to describe this Peer Training Network. This network is one of three peer networks sponsored by the National Child Welfare Resource Center for Organizational Improvement. The training network is comprised of people who are engaged in some aspect of child welfare training. Some members are trainers, some are curriculum writers, some manage training, some members are academics. Many do a bit of everything. There are people in this network from every state in the nation and some of the territories, and so it's really a very diverse and active group. Network participants are folks interested in learning from each other, sharing ideas and materials, and joining discussions on various child welfare training topics. This network offers many opportunities for you to connect with child welfare training experts across the country, people who share your interest in improving the lives of children and families through effective training. These quarterly calls are the centerpiece of this network. We select topics together. Occasionally, like today, we have a presenter who is often a network member. Often, we just open the lines and discuss a particular topic that we've selected in advance. During the calls, the expectation is that you will actively participate by listening, sharing, and contributing your experiences and expertise to your peers. So that's a little bit about our network and the calls. The other major activity that it involves the Peer Training Network is we serve as a resource for each other for ideas on curriculum, materials, and resources. As many of you know who have been in this network for several years, I often get calls for information, requests for example, do you have curriculum on training for middle managers in a child welfare agency? Or do you have curriculum on interviewing depressed youth? And what I will do is very quickly turn that email around and send it out to the network and ask if anybody can respond or provide a suggestion and resource. So in that way, there's been a lot of curriculum shared across the country from agency to agency, and people find that's a really helpful component of this network. So again, welcome to the network. I'm glad you're all here today. I'm glad you're part of our network, and I look forward to our work together. Usually we do a roll call, but I'm not going to today because we have so many people on the call, and we also have a topic that is really very extensive. So I really want to just get into the call and introduce Kathy Jones Kelly, who is our presenter today. Her topic is going to be classroom training and beyond. We are, by the way, going to be taping this call, and it will be available on the Resource Center website
for future reference. So if you want to refer back to anything that was said today by Kathy or any of the other her other colleagues, the call will be available for download from the Resource Center website, which is www.nrcoi.org. As I mentioned, we're fortunate to have Ms. Kathy Jones-Kelly on our call today to start off our discussion. Kathy is the former director of the Pennsylvania Child Welfare Training Program and currently is an organizational effectiveness consultant with APHSA. The Pennsylvania training system, under Kathy's leadership and direction, earned a well-deserved reputation for delivering quality training, for being one of the first training systems to develop training standards, policies, and procedures, and for always looking for ways to innovate and help achieve positive organizational and family outcomes. Today, Kathy will focus on ways that child welfare agencies can look beyond the traditional classroom training when developing their training systems if the desired outcome is to support practice improvement, and I think that's what we're all about. She will discuss the decisions made and lessons learned over a seven-year period to transform a traditional classroom training model to a comprehensive training system, one that offers classroom training and on-site technical assistance, transfer of learning to support effective organization and improve practice. I know many of you know Kathy and have worked with her over the years. I just want to say that when I first became involved in child welfare training, I heard from almost every person that I talked to that the Pennsylvania training system was a model. I really needed to get to know it, and that Kathy was just a reliable source of excellent information, and she has been just so giving of her time and expertise that for me it's an honor and a pleasure to have her on this call today, and I look forward myself to hearing what she's going to say. So, Kathy, let me turn the call over to you, and thank you so much for taking the time out to talk with us today.
Thanks, Susan. First, I really want to thank you for asking me, but also on the call are a couple other people. Pennsylvania's story, as Susan said, started well over 7 years ago, and so I thought it would be important that a few other people from Pennsylvania participate in the call. One is Mary Rose McCarthy, and she's the current director for the Pennsylvania Child Welfare Training Program and is looking forward, I'm sure, to working with all of you as she continues to grow the program. But also Jerry Sopko from the Pennsylvania Child Welfare Training Program, who is, I guess, kind of responsible for kind of setting this call up with Susan, and also John Rubin, who's currently with APHSA, but also formerly of Pennsylvania Child Welfare Training Program. And I guess there's a whole contingency there from Pennsylvania. So as I kind of go over this, please feel free to jump in and add things that that you think are important for folks on the call to know. The way we organized the information today was kind of into three areas. One is just kind of talking about continuous improvement and what it is, and then sharing the story of Pennsylvania and the transformation of their training system. But I also wanted to share a story of a more recent group that started to look at organizational improvement, and that's Texas, so folks can get a sense of what it's like in those beginning phases and stages. And then basically just talking about what organizational effectiveness is with regard to its implementation in a training system, and then take any questions. If anybody has questions along the way, though, feel free to jump in. I'm assuming everyone got the slideshow, as well as a handout that kind of describes information that's in an organizational effectiveness handbook that facilitators can use. In looking at the slides, I just wanted to start with the what is continuous improvement. In Pennsylvania, I think one of the things that I was really honored to be a part of was a partnership that involved the state, the counties, and the University of Pittsburgh. And throughout the time I was there, it was, I think, the anchor for everything that happened in the training system. So the work was of many people, all guided by a common vision and mission, which was just really trying to make sure that casework staff at the front line had what they needed in order to effectively serve families. One of the things that the training system constantly did was always ask itself, you know, what is our vision, mission, and values, and what is it that we're doing well to support that, and what is it that we need to do differently? There was always a philosophy that no matter what we were building, it could be better. And so it was that constant asking, how do we make this better? The other thing was always asking stakeholders for feedback to evaluate effectiveness of what was being developed. The county agencies, Pennsylvania is a state-supervised, county-administered child welfare system, and the counties were just critical in helping to provide feedback on what was working well for them and what wasn't, so that we could always look at how to improve the system there. We had a clearly defined strategy. We had developed a strategic plan that guided the work, and everybody within the training system was well aware of what their piece of that strategic plan was. And again, just the shared partnerships that are really critical for this kind of growth and change to occur in a training system. And again, just the overall commitment to continuous improvement. With that kind of a framing, let me kind of talk a little bit about Pennsylvania's story. And again, Mary Rose, Jerry, and John, feel free to jump in here. While I was at the Pennsylvania Child Welfare Training Program, there was always a vision to ensure frontline practice would support positive outcomes for children and families. And the training system started much like all of the other training programs that are in the nation, with the goal of developing and delivering classroom training that could help develop knowledge, skills, and values of the child welfare workforce. In 1999, the state was wanting to take a look at how effective the training program was. At that point, the training program was about 7 years old, and they brought in the American Humane Association to do a program evaluation. That program evaluation was guided by Jane Birdie, who was at American Humane at the time, and part of the team included Jane Birdie, Robin Leake, and Cindy Perry, as well as Dale Curry. Dale Curry was brought in specifically due to his work in transfer of learning, and the evaluation was not just going to be a traditional evaluation to look at what was going well, but also to develop a plan on how the training program could begin to strengthen various components of its training system. Basically, in the beginning, it was to look at transfer of learning and how do we make adjustments in the training program in order to make sure that what was going on in the classroom really was being used back on the job. As a part of the evaluation, what came out of that was that the training program really did have solid curriculum. It had solid standards in place for how it developed its curriculum and its trainers, and that it was positioned to try to strengthen transfer of learning in its structure. At that point, though, the challenge really became that the training system was at a small university, and in order to support the growth and expansion that would be needed to make transfer of learning happen, the training program was moved to its current home at the University of Pittsburgh. Around the same time, Pennsylvania was completing its practice standards, and the practice standards gave us kind of the framework, if you will, for what kinds of outcomes were being expected throughout the life of a case, and they follow the casework process. The curriculum was all being aligned with the practice standards so that as curriculum was being delivered, the workers would become familiar with what the standards of practice were and then what types of knowledge and skill they needed in order to achieve those standards. Shortly after that, Pennsylvania underwent its first Child and Family Services review. And at that time, as part of the program improvement plan, we were charged with developing something called the Center for Excellence. So up until that time, the training program was still delivering primarily classroom training, guided by an individual training needs assessment tool that workers completed every year. And the training was directed towards the practice standards. What we saw as our gap was that the organization wasn't always ready to support workers with the new information that was being learned in the classroom. I'm sure you're all familiar with when workers come to training, they'll say, well, we don't do it that way back at our agency. And Pennsylvania was no different than that. In starting the Center for Excellence, it was a vision, basically, of our deputy secretary at the time and also the children and youth administrators, that we would develop a center that would help support organizational development, and that in addition to the training we delivered, we would provide on-site support to county agencies. Jerry Sopko, who's on the phone, was the original director for the Center for Excellence and kind of my partner in crime, if you will, in trying to decide what organizational development would look like. That was in 2002, and in 2002 is when we first met Phil Basso at American Public Human Service Association and became familiar with work he was doing in the arena of organizational effectiveness. The model really resonated with both Jerry and I because it was aligned with the organizational systems model, which we had been training in our curriculum. So we eventually brought Phil into Pennsylvania to meet with our county and state, the steering committee for the program improvement plan, and begin to make some decisions around how we would develop an organizational effectiveness component through the Center for Excellence. One of the big changes that happened about that time was developing something called an organizational needs assessment versus an individual training needs assessment. What we wanted to try to do was work with county agencies and assess their needs-based budgets and plans that they were putting together, information from quality service reviews that they were conducting, and try to really look at what the outcomes were that the agency was specifically working towards, and then provide on-site technical assistance, transfer of learning support, and gear the classroom training very specifically to the outcomes that the agency was after. So the training program started to make a move away from individual training needs assessments to an organizational needs assessment. Jerry, I don't know if you want to talk a little bit about what that looks like, the actual organizational needs assessment. He must be muted out.
Am I back in the call?
Yep, we can hear you now, Jerry.
Okay, I had myself muted there. Just real simple, there's a form or format that we put in place, but what we found is it kind of takes on its own course and direction. So as we start into the conversation with an organization or an agency, we generally head off in whatever direction they want to go. So I have to say that our form that we created has been useful in framing the task, but in terms of its application, it's worked out in so many different ways and been applied differently with each county. We have a wide variety of counties, from Philadelphia, our largest, to some very small counties. So we try to stay flexible enough to use the tool in a way that's helpful for the agency and is going to get to their issues and their needs. So is that what you're looking for, Kath?
Right. And so basically what happened was moving away from having workers sitting with their supervisors and assessing themselves in a variety of competency areas that can range the entire spectrum of child welfare to sitting down with agency directors and their key stakeholders, whoever they define as part of their leadership and stakeholder groups, to find out where that county's going and really begin to try to make the efforts that we're helping them be very county-focused and county-specific. So they're in, I guess, the second year of implementing the ONA, or is it the third year?
We're starting our third round.
Starting third round. As Jerry said, there's 67 counties in Pennsylvania, and so in order, because it's very labor-intensive to do the on-site organizational needs assessment, we had to stagger the implementation of it. And so there were 22 counties per year that were getting their ONA, and Philadelphia was going to be handled as its own separate kind of group with a team being put together just to work with Philadelphia. And I believe, Mary, that's still under development, isn't it?
We're in the process of actually posting and advertising for those jobs now.
Okay. So Philadelphia will have its own team.
But, Kathy, you may want to mention, though, that a team did go to every county, even though Philadelphia is a little larger, that it wasn't just one person that went up to the county, that the training program went out with transfer of learning specialists and curriculum writers and OE specialists and really kind of a team to help assess the county's needs.
Right. What John's referring to is a brand new role was created called Practice Improvement Specialist, and they're the ones who conduct the ONA along with a team. So the curriculum writers are part of that. We have independent living specialists who focus on youth and care. They're part of the team, and the transfer of learning specialists. And in many ways, it was the first time that the curriculum writers were actually on site in the counties. Even though the training program had always used a quality assurance process to use teams of frontline workers and supervisors to develop curriculum, the shift here was actually the curriculum writers going right to the county agency. Most of the specialists have a cluster of counties that they're assigned to, and they work with probably up to about 8 counties based on the size of the counties. So right now they're in the middle of doing the on-site, providing the on-site support. They're helping counties build strategic playbooks so that the counties can link what it is they're trying to achieve with the technical assistance and transfer of learning. Some examples of real kind of on-site creative work includes a piece that was done in a county that wanted to really focus on developing their strength-focused, the Shulman interactional helping skills are embedded down into all of the curriculum, and one county really wanted to do an intensive training where all of the supervisors and workers were trained on-site, and then on-site support was used to help them with implementation of the Shulman skills in their day-to-day work. Another county worked on the development of a strategic playbook. So each county is very different with what it picks. Several counties were given support in developing systems of care through a facilitated process by the program improvement specialist. So that's kind of where it was when I left. And I don't know, Mary Rose, if you want to add anything of kind of where it is currently.
No, I think that's a real good description of where counties are being served by the training program now.
And Mary Rose, by the way, was a county children and youth administrator before she came to the training system as its director, and actually was involved in having some of this on-site support provided to her in her county of Northumberland. And we understand they were just the county in the CFSR that concluded a couple months ago, and they did very well. So she's experienced it from both sides, as an administrator and now as the leader of the training program.
You could accuse us of being heavy users of the training program.
So that's kind of the Pennsylvania story. Let me talk about another example, and I wanted to share this because in Texas, what they've decided to do is implement use continuous improvement and organizational effectiveness models, but they're choosing to do it in a very different way. And what they've decided to do is they wanted to create leadership teams that could drive continuous improvement. And instead of going through their training system, what they've elected to do is they have been training all of their regional directors in what we call DAPM, or the kind of the systematic approach to doing organizational effectiveness. And then they've selected a team who currently conducts mock CFSR reviews in each of their region to actually become the program improvement specialist that will do the ongoing work with the count with their regions. And so I wanted to share this story because as training systems are trying to get into doing organizational effectiveness and organizational development work, if the training system isn't seen out in the forefront as kind of the group that can do this, leadership will kind of pick other avenues, and the training may or may not be considered part of what's considered part of the quality assurance solution. In the case of Texas, they've partnered with Casey Family Programs and APHSA, and they've been learning all of the APHSA models, which I'll show you here briefly, and they're building what they're calling an organizational effective sustainability team. It is part of their CFSR and PIP, and it's a very evolving process where almost every single time we go there, they're seeing a different component of their system that needs to be brought into learning about organizational effectiveness and the models and frames from APHSA. John, do you want to talk about the disproportionality piece?
I'll just briefly say that we had a team of folks prepared to go down to Austin, Texas about 2 weeks ago, and we were going to work, as Kathy said, with the regional management teams, which was going to be a big group of whatever it was, 70, 80 people, and we had a group of us going down as facilitators. And then Texas kind of threw us a little bit of a curveball, and they identified a group of staff that they have at the state, across the state, who work with disproportionality in Texas and wanted to include this team in the continuous improvement work and help us apply a disproportionality lens to the work. But they weren't really set up as the other regional management teams were and what have you, and they wanted to see what we could do to help improve outcomes with disproportionality. And what was interesting about our approach with Texas then became I took on the role of helping with the disproportionality team myself, but it really highlighted that this OE approach was flexible and was able to, just a couple days before we were scheduled to go do a session with them, able to kind of on the fly change the session. And that's, you know, really different than if you had just a static training that you had planned that you couldn't really be flexible on. But because we were going down to facilitate an assessment and some development of a process, we recognized that they're the experts and that we're helping facilitate pulling information out of them and helping them find out what they need. We were able to really on the fly change and include the work with the disproportionality team, and we had a really good first session, and we're looking forward to going down again in a couple of weeks and blending the work of the disproportionality specialist with these regional management teams. And again, we were able to do that because the OE process expects a certain amount of learn by doing, new information, follow the client where they're at, as opposed to coming in with a set curriculum. So that was interesting in Texas.
And actually tomorrow I have another call with Texas where they're going to be bringing in the rest of their specialists to also learn the OE models. And I guess that's a good transition and into what is organizational effectiveness and how is it different from traditional classroom training? And why does it have so much impact? And I think John hit it where when you're working with the child welfare agencies from a framework of organizational effectiveness, you're going in with somewhat of an agenda, but the agenda needs to be very fluid and flexible based on the needs that the agency identifies. So organizational effectiveness is kind of the systematic way of continuously improving the organization. The OE approach looks at real-world observations, what's really happening in the agency. It's based on the experiential learning cycle. We know that adults like to learn by doing. We know that adults like to tell us what their needs are. And so it's a little bit different than traditional classroom training, where you have a set curriculum and the trainer is basically trying to get through pieces of content during the session versus doing a learning by doing with a set team from an organization and letting them identify what their needs are and then facilitating dialogue and discussion based on their individual needs. I mentioned DAPM early, and DAPM is the systematic approach to OE. You'll see the flywheel there. Basically, when we go into an organization, you're helping the organization define what its desired state is. In Pennsylvania, they use the ONA to help do this. In Texas, they haven't developed a particular tool to do that yet because they're in their early stages. And what they're doing is they're just now defining what it is they want their leadership to look like and what is that desired state for them as a child welfare agency. After you define that desired state, you assess where it is you currently are. And after you're done assessing, there's this piece called building the bridge to planning. And this is where you really help the organization begin to look at root causes and identify if those root causes are structural or relational, and then what it is that you need to do to overcome the gaps. So, for example, if you know that you're not, if you're having retention issues, and as a result of the retention issues, you have constant turnover and families aren't getting the services they need, we can keep training new workers, but until we really begin to look at the root cause for that turnover and begin to work on that organizational issue that is affecting the child welfare agency, the training is not going to make the impact that you want. For every organization, that root cause is going to look different. The root cause could be policies and procedures that are in place that make it ineffective for workers to actually work with families and they get frustrated and leave. It could be the hiring process itself and the way HR screens and recruits qualified candidates. So while you're working with the leadership team on what those root causes are, you can see training is just one solution. There might be trust issues in an organization, and you begin to facilitate team activities around trust so that you can begin to plan. And in planning, you look at quick wins, things that you can do right away to make changes in the organization so that they can begin to move forward. And then longer-term plans, such as the kind of three-year plan that Pennsylvania went through to actually transform their child welfare training program to include these organizational effectiveness components. After planning, of course, there's implement the plan, and then monitor the plan. And monitoring tends to be the thing that we focus on a good bit because often organizations develop plans and they may never implement them, or if they do implement them, they're not monitoring the effectiveness, and then they just begin to change again. So in monitoring, once again, you're looking at what outcome was that child welfare agency after, and what are the lessons learned and the impact review from what you've implemented. So you're teaching kind of the structured way of looking at the organization to the child welfare agency so that they're not caught up in a cycle of constant change that's not based on data, and also that they're not just sending folks off to training as their only solution, but that they're implementing organizational changes at the same time that they're getting training for their staff. This DAPM flywheel is applied against the organizational systems model, which is kind of the systemic part of this. and really looking at what the strategy is for the organization, what are those inputs, the resources that come into the organization, the performance capacity piece or the tasks that people engage in, and then the performance. What are the outputs and outcomes, and are they getting us what we want with regards to the feedback? So GAFM is applied to the org system in order to get at what types of training and technical assistance and transfer of learning is really needed. Kind of finally, what does it mean in a training system for a training system to begin to engage in organizational effectiveness versus just traditional classroom training? From my perspective, and Mary Rose and Jerry and John, feel free to jump in here, it allows for a facilitated dialogue and action planning with leadership teams on what their strategy is, how ready they are for achieving the outcomes they're after, and then how do they build the performance capacity that they really need to achieve that. And that they're looking at everything with regard to performance capacity, not just training. And it also allows a dialogue and action planning with managers and supervisors around the culture of the agency, the structure of the agency, key processes, and daily operations, so that you can provide technical assistance and support to managers and supervisors around how they impact those particular parts of the organization, so that when workers do go off to training, the organization has a culture that supports continuous learning and continuous improvement, and that they have processes and daily operations in place that help support the new things that workers have learned. The other thing it helps the training system do is to develop and deliver more targeted training, technical assistance, and transfer of learning. So in a traditional way of analyzing your individual training needs assessment, a worker may self-identify that they have training needs in up to hundreds of areas. They might have chosen to go to training in sexual abuse, while the agency is trying to really focus on services to families where there's drug addiction. So what this does is it narrows what the worker will do. I know every state has different kinds of training requirements. Pennsylvania had 20 hours per year, and workers may or may not pick a topic area that's directly related. It may be a personal need for them, but it may not be directly related to the outcomes that the agency's trying to achieve. So by doing the ONAs and organizational effectiveness models, that training can become very targeted. And also, there's a focus on continuous improvement and building the capacity of the organization versus just getting training scores. Too many of the training systems rely very heavily on what was the trainer's score at the end of the day. When you're doing organizational effectiveness work, the participants are often kind of knocked off a little bit by the challenges that you're giving them and the things that you're making them ask themselves about their organization. So the training score is not what's important, but are you challenging that organization to really think about itself and what it's trying to achieve, and then delivering the specific things that the agency needs versus, you know, did I get a 4.0 on a 4.0 scale? In an organization, you're helping an organization learn about an approach to organizational effectiveness that they can use over and over in their day-to-day work, and it becomes a way of doing business for them. The organization can apply the organizational effectiveness models to its strategic planning, as well as when they're thinking about implementing a new practice, such as family group decision making or youth engagement. And also that the organization can begin to view classroom training as just one of the many components that's needed to build their capacity, that it's not just all about sending folks to training, but how do we really help the organization as a whole develop. So with that, I was going to stop for questions and answers unless Jerry, John, Mary Rose, you have something to offer in addition to what I said there.
I was just going to say, Kathy, as you were saying that, I think that just understanding the phrase continuous improvement, I think, is important to us. In other words, everybody could, wherever they're at, you could still continuously improve, and I think that's one of our messages, that it's not a change message, you know what I mean, where you have to come in and rewrite the whole book or change everything, but no matter where you are, even agencies that are doing very well could probably target areas for continuous improvement.
Mm-hmm.
That's part of the OE message.
Yeah, good point, John.
Hey, Kathy, this is Susan, and before you open it up to the group for questions, can I ask you and your colleagues to comment on, this is sort of it's a workload question, but that's not my intent. It's going to come out sounding like this. You have now started in Pennsylvania and really worked, more than started, you're well into converting the training to this new approach. What are you doing to keep the baseline basic training going? For new workers, what are you doing? For supervisors, what are you doing? And I guess that's my question. That still is going on, right?
Oh, yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah, there's still, I think, Mary's, I don't have the numbers from last year, but I know when I left, there was delivering about 1,500 days of training a year. The new worker training is 120 hours. It's a skills-based model called Charting the Course, where workers learn the interactional helping skills, and they learn how to apply them to the casework process. They learn about the child welfare laws in Pennsylvania, you know, the basic core trainings, 60-hour supervisor training, 12-hour leadership academy for new administrators. So all of that training is still going on. In the new worker development, and then ongoing training still continues as well. It's just that it's trying to be more guided and more county specific based on the outcomes of the county assessments.
Thank you. That answers my question.
Mm-hmm. Mary Rose, was there about 1,500 days last year as well?
Well, the staff are actually saying that it was more.
More, okay.
Yeah, because of just more demands for requests for training, as well as then, of course, the charting a course.
Oh, okay.
Okay. Thank you very much. My head is abuzz, but I want to open the lines up now for questions. If you are muted, remember the way to unmute your phone is star 6.
Kathy, this is Lori from Rhode Island. How are you?
Good. How are you?
Good. I just have a question about the staffing. How many people do you have dedicated to organizational effectiveness on your training team? In other words, you mentioned, and several others mentioned, bringing a team out to meet with folks, leaders in each county, and I'm just wondering how many people that is and what percentage of your your whole training system is dedicated to that process.
Mary Rose, that might be, you could give her current numbers. I think when I left, there was like 6 practice improvement specialists and 4 transfer of learning and 2 independent living specialists. Is that still?
No, there's 3 independent living specialists.
Okay.
Mm-hmm. How many, we've got about 12 practice improvement specialists. This is Lynn Kelp. We've got an organizational effectiveness department, and there's 16 practice improvement people there who do the various technical assistance, transfer of learning, independent living work, and we're more and more integrating those practices. And I think part of the question was who goes out to the counties. It's not just that department. It's a training program. Let's say it's Jerry out in the western part of Pennsylvania and 1 or 2 other practice improvement specialists, but the curriculum specialist from the curriculum department goes, the training delivery specialists go, so that we're, and the MIS, the technology people go, so that we're well represented when we meet with the counties and can address the various needs. We also have our program development department that is helping with things like CFSR and CAPTA, so they also participate. It depends, again, on time available, but it's always a team approach. It's a cross-department team that goes to the counties. Kathy, do you want to spend some time talking about the regional team development?
Yeah, we could. Basically, there's a regional team that is assigned to every county, and all of the people that Lynn had just mentioned are on that team, so that a county gets support in a variety of different areas. One of the things that's really, really different about Pennsylvania's training system than a lot of the other systems I've seen is how integrated the training system is with state leadership and county leadership. All of the people who work there are who are either curriculum or practice improvement folks are former child welfare practitioners, either in public or private agencies, and or in some of the other cross-systems groups that we need to work with in child welfare, such as domestic violence, drug and alcohol, places like things like that. So the team is a regional team that's actually out in the field. The specialists work from their home so that they're close to the counties and can really be on site to help the county agencies with whatever kind of support is needed. I know, Mary Rose, if you want to add anything else about the team.
Well, the other thing that I think we need to emphasize is the youth ambassadors and the family, the parent ambassadors, in terms of the growth,
mm-hmm.
so that we can add their perspective and perception to and advice to the team, the counties, as they attempt to look at you know, the organizational effectiveness.
What Mary Rose is referring to there is the training system actually employs youth who were in the foster care system and a parent who received services. And they're real integrated into all aspects of the training program's development. That's a good point, Mary Rose. I forgot about that.
Thanks, Lori, for that question. We'll take another question, and again, you need to unmute your phone by pounding *6.
Hi, this is Vivian Kidd from Arizona.
Mm-hmm.
Could you just explain a little bit more when you're talking about I just lost it. The strategic playbook
mm-hmm.
technique.
Yeah. What the strategic playbook does is it helps the organization define its desired state, what it is that it wants to look like, and then it does the assessment, what it currently looks like, and then it defines the overall arching plan, the continuous improvement plan that the organization is going to follow in order to get there. The strategic playbook can also be used by the organization to ensure that everybody who works in the organization is on the same page with regards to roles and responsibilities. It's a real comprehensive view of the organization. Some agencies can also use the strategic playbook to give to their strategic partners, their key stakeholders, so that those outside the organization know what it is that the Child Welfare Agency is about and where it is that it's trying to get to. There is a template for the strategic playbook, and if you wanted to see that template, maybe through Susan I could get your email and get the template for the strategic playbook out so that you could see all of the components that are in it. I will caution you that most child welfare organizations, instead of doing a real comprehensive strategic playbook, they frequently like to focus on one issue and build a continuous improvement plan around that particular topic area. It seems like it's easier for folks to apply and to get folks motivated, like working on an issue like retention or building a system of care or implementing family group decision-making practices. So often, you know, an organization will want to focus on a particular topic versus looking at the entire organization. I don't know, Lynn, do you have other examples you'd want to give where that's been applied to?
with where the strategic playbook is applied?
Yeah, or like when they, how, I know there's other content areas that are real specific practice areas that they've used instead of a whole strategic playbook.
I think that the family group decision making and the family engagement are some of the biggest emphases right now, and we use what you described as the DAPA model, but we have our own organizational effectiveness model. We use that as sort of a way of thinking. So any of the practice changes that the staff go out and help counties with are done within that framework of assessing, planning, implementing, and evaluating. So it has worked very well with family group decision-making. We're using it a lot now with strengths-based, solution-focused, which started out as a training, but as counties tried to implement that type of practice, they found out that they had some organizational barriers. So the transfer of learning and the technical assistance have become integral to helping a county successfully change their practice from looking at families as just clients and not being strength-based to moving to where we engage each other as colleagues in a more strength-based way and model that within our agencies, as well as how we work with the families, children, and youth. So I think that's been, if we didn't have those three techniques, if you will, combined, the counties would be less successful in changing their practices.
I think the other piece, hi, Kathy, it's Christina.
Hi.
Hi. I think the other piece, speaking specifically to the playbooks, a number of counties have used the charters that are in there to help guide some of their committee work, to help give it a frame of reference, help identify what goals they were going to be working on or what the objectives were and what their parameters or boundaries in which they could operate to get that work done. So that's, I haven't seen many counties take on the playbook as a whole. But that has been a piece of the playbook that has been used in a couple of different counties.
This is Joanne Jackson from New Jersey. I am really, really interested in the strategic playbook template, just to give me a better feel for what you're describing. If there's some way, maybe on a website, we could access something like this.
Eventually, it'll be up on APHSA's website. I know it's not there yet, but again, what I can do is email the template to Susan, and she could send it out to everybody who's on the call. Is that okay, Susan?
I would be very happy to do that. Thank you.
There's also an initiative called the Positioning of Public Child Welfare that's being funded by KC Family Programs, and APHSA is involved in it. And what it's doing is it's putting out guidance for the field of public child welfare, and one of the areas is in strategy, and the template for the strategic playbook is being reviewed by the group who's working on the strategy. So once it's updated, we can make sure that gets out to everybody as well.
Great.
Kathy, it's Jerry. And just to add on about the playbook to something that Christina said and you were alluding to, it is difficult to get an organization at an early stage of development to start thinking about that playbook as a comprehensive document about the organization. But one of the easy ways to get into that is to use the charters and help them charter a group that's going to work on retention, that's going to work on permanency initiatives, whatever it may be, and then kind of wrap the whole book around them. But like you said, you almost have to apply it to an initiative or a current problem or something that they're facing. Otherwise, it seems as though it's just a model or a theory or something that really isn't grounded in any sort of realistic or reality work.
Jerry, this is Lynn. Jerry, do you think that the logic model or any type of strategic plan helps lead into the use of the strategic playbook also as they begin their work?
Oh, I think so. As we use the logic model approaches with them and some of the stuff from our OE field guide, and use those kinds of models, that's very helpful as well for counties to kind of grasp on to some of these and make use of them.
Kathy?
Go ahead. Did we have another question?
Can you hear me?
Yes.
Yeah, this is Jeff Adams with the Missouri Children's Division. I just wanted to see if you could talk just a little bit more about the transfer of learning process and how that has played out specifically. You know, are staff being asked to demonstrate certain skills and abilities, and if so, what are those, you know, what are those things, and how are you capturing that?
I can start out, and then I'm going to turn it over to Mary Rose for what's current. When the transfer of learning pieces were originally designed, the training program consulted fairly heavily with Dale Curry from Kent State University due to Dale's work in this area, specifically in child welfare. And as a result of working with Dale, a 10-step approach was used with regards to transfer of learning, and that information, I believe, is posted on the training program's website, but it wraps an entire 10-step process around a particular curriculum that workers go through with their supervisors. So there is some initial assessment by the worker and the supervisor, and then they go through a process, and there's assessment done again. But the assessment is very specific to the content area. The packages, there's one on visitation, engaging fathers. All of the topics were directly related to the first CFSR. And I know, Mary Rose, in the year I've been gone, there's been a lot more done on evaluation.
Oh, the transfer of learning, I think, has grown, but I'd like Mary Ann, who's the supervisor of that unit, to be able to discuss that.
Oh, I didn't know she was there.
Yeah.
Hi, Mary Ann.
Hi, Kathy. I came in late.
Okay.
So I heard you probably for the last 20 minutes. we have the 10-step packages for four curriculum. That's engaging fathers, family group decision-making, family reunification through visitation, and kinship. And those are the long packages. And yeah, you're right. The caseworkers fill out self-assessments at three different periods of time throughout the package, as well as the supervisors. The supervisors are filling out these assessments for each of their caseworkers. And they're all based on the learning objectives from each of the curriculums, so they're all different.
They're also, Marianne, did you still leave them connected to the CFSR instrument?
You know, the 10-step packages are related to the CFSR.
Yeah. The long-term goal would be that as they're collecting the data, it's also connected back to the CFSR outcome area that particular curriculum addresses. And so over time, hopefully enough data would be collected to be able to see, our workers who are going through the 10-step packages, are we seeing any difference in the CFSR outcomes whenever the either feds come in and or the mock reviews that are done in the counties occur? So that'll take quite a few hits, though, to see whether or not there's going to be a long-term impact, but at least the data is being collected against the outcomes.
All right, just to follow up, the packet that has some of these, the self-assessment and the supervisor looking at this as well, is there any place where supervisors are modeling, or, you know, if it's not the supervisor one, then the mentor, are they modeling for staff in the field a particular skill, and then are the staff, you know, taking a part of that and then having that conversation with the supervisor about, you know, what went well, you know, what could have been done differently, those kind of things? I mean, is there anything around that gets into actually watching skill as far as the behavior goes?
There's structured activities that happen, and each package is designed a little different based on the content. So there is activities to begin to look at what the workers are learning and then what's happening when they're trying to apply them in the field. And the specialists go in to facilitate those dialogues with the staff and with the supervisors. Mary, I don't know if you want to give a concrete example of one.
Sure. Yeah, and I think that we don't, it's not real a directive approach in the TOL packages. We do typically meet separately with a group of supervisors who are having caseworkers go through a TOL package. And we talk about it. We really do try to individualize it. So we'll say, what is going to work with this agency? What's going to work with your units to help facilitate the transfer? And we have a list of different tools that we encourage supervisors to use with their caseworkers. One of them is going out and modeling, but we don't give them a checklist to say, go ahead and do this. We do talk about supervisory skills and building supervisory capacity and that whole modeling and coaching and the providing of feedback as a way to facilitate transfer. But we don't specifically give the supervisors concrete tasks to do, other than we let them know that they're in charge of doing the assessment. We would like to eventually, depending on the amount of resources we get to, this could be years down the road, but actually going out and doing observation of caseworkers in the field, but that's probably a long ways off.
Okay, thanks.
We're doing one, this is Jerry again, and as an example, it's not one of the four structured programs, but an emerging need that directors in the western region of Pennsylvania started to see is concurrent planning is a problem. So we've started working with some of our counties around that topic. And what we've done is create a TOL approach, and we're applying it now in one county and then working with several of the neighboring counties. They're going to be up next. And the approach, as Mary Ann said, is kind of tailored to this medium-sized county in Pennsylvania. And we're working with we met with supervisors individually and then with the caseworkers in three subsequent meetings. And they've been through the actual six-hour training block. And one of my colleagues and I will be going back up there for the post sessions to process some of this and work with the staff around some of the tasks they were given in the training and some of the things that are going on. And we already realized that we have to add one more meeting to this whole process, going back to the managers and the leadership and processing this whole thing, debriefing it, and figuring out where they want to go with it. So it is kind of an individual application, and it's going to look very different in the next group of smaller counties when we go out and meet with them probably next month and start the process with them.
Susan, this is Kathy McIntosh.
Hi, Kathy. Go ahead.
I've got a different question. I'm really interested in hearing more about that organizational needs assessment and what sort of tool you've developed to use for that and what support you have figured out to use for people to really use it well.
And Jerry and others, feel free to jump in, but the organizational needs assessment tool is basically a document that helps guide a discussion with an organization, so it's not something that gets spelled out word for word. The tool, is the tool on the website?
If it's not, we'll make sure it gets up there.
Okay. It basically has a variety of questions that gets the leadership of an organization to start thinking about their mission, vision, and values, and where it is that they're trying to take the organization, what practices they're implementing in their organization and why. And so it's a facilitated discussion based on kind of it's almost like a reflective thinking guide or a guide that helps. So it's not like a checklist that you go through and every single thing gets answered or filled out. But there is a report that's written afterwards where the team puts together a report and gives to the agency and with some recommendations around training and transfer of learning and technical assistance. And the agency, of course, gets to have input into the final report. There are a lot of themes that the regional teams see from county to county with regards to what they're identifying as needs, and then they try to work with the counties and cluster them. But but the instrument isn't like something where, you know, it's 20 questions and all 20 questions get answered and rated. It's really something to guide dialogue.
Oh, that makes a lot of sense. Thank you. That's really helpful.
And if I can, Kathy, if I can add to that, this is Jerry again. One of the things that precedes that process, we have our own version of the CFSR that we've used in the counties. So the results of that county CFSR, if you will, we call it a quality service review. We use that information. We get their needs-based plan and budget, and we review all these documents where we're getting some sense of what standards they want to work on, what it is that they put in their needs-based as initiatives and programs. So we use a lot of information that administrators have already put together so that we're not going in there and asking questions that, you know, we should have the answers to. So we have a base and a foundation when we go in there, and we can talk to them in terms of, I noticed in your needs base you said you had a real need for A, B, and C. So we can kind of get down to brass tacks, and then, as Kathy said, tie that back to their vision for their community and talk a little bit about how we could support that, what would they need, and then we put all that into a report, which then gets negotiated with the county and make sure we have the right things and set it the right way. And then we use that as a plan or an outline for our next 3 years of involvement with the county.
Oh, I really like that. Thank you.
This is Gail. If I could just add one thing, too. We also try and look at curriculum needs, whether it's a generic need across the board or it's specific to the county. And there are times that we can refer them to the online curricula we have that they might be able to use pieces of for their specific needs.
And I think, this is Lynn in Pennsylvania, another thing that I think we've observed here and worked through is that when you're a training program who's used to using a curriculum and that kind of standard method of presenting training, when you develop a template for something like an organizational needs assessment, you have to remember to step out of here's how you do it, follow step A through Z, because truly our template is a guideline, just like our organizational effectiveness guide is a guide, and we can pick and choose out of there what works best for us in the county. The organizational needs assessment is a guideline, and when the teams go out, they've done that research Jerry was talking about to know something about the county, and they know what areas to pull from with questions. And as it's comfortable, the teams split up that questioning and pull it in, and it becomes a very natural format, not a, well, have you done this, have you done that, here's how to do this and that. So I think it's a change in mindset from traditional training to the technical assistance.
And Lynn makes a really good point. One of the things that's really hard for systems that are traditional classroom training systems is to step out of that box that you're in with regards to how you develop and design curriculum, because you really do have to be able to customize and facilitate dialogue in a way that it's based on what the counties or the state agencies and need. So it's that learning by doing with them and being able to be flexible with the products that you currently have so that they can be adjusted to meet the needs that are surfacing as you work with the teams at the agency level.
Okay, thank you.
This is Susan. I think it was Kathy, but I'm not sure, mentioned that the organizational needs assessment may be on a website. Can you repeat what that website would be for the group?
Yeah, it's the training program's website, www.pacwcbt.pitt.edu. Did I get that right?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
That's it.
And also, Susan, since I've been over at APHSA, I've worked on something called an organizational continuous improvement assessment, which kind of takes the organizational needs assessment to
a level that looks right at the org systems model, and I can attach that when I attach the strategic playbook.
That's fabulous, and then I can circulate it to the peer training network group?
Yeah.
Thank you, Kathy. That would be wonderful.
I think, too, just if you haven't been out on Pennsylvania's training program's website, it's a huge resource. All of their curriculum is posted. And I think, Marianne, do you have the transfer of learning packages posted?
No, those are not up yet.
They're not up yet.
We expect to have them up shortly.
It's a site worth visiting every once in a while because they're always updating it once they're, you know, finishing their products, and they share real openly the things that get developed and designed.
This is Susan. I concur. It's an excellent website. I look at it regularly. So it really moves a lot. So it's important to go back and look at it periodically. We have time for probably one more question. Is someone sitting out there with a burning question for this group of experts? Okay. I'm assuming everybody remembered, and no one was talking with their phone muted, *6 to come off mute. If I hear no other questions, does Kathy, Jerry, the whole group that's there, Mary Rose, do you have any last-minute words of advice or comments you would like to share with your peers? This has been an extraordinarily informative call, but if you have anything else you'd like to say to us, please, now's your time.
I guess one thing for all the training systems to realize is all of the training systems in child welfare have different strengths that they can build on to create a model for organizational effectiveness. Adding components like this and things like having an ONA or a version of an organizational needs assessment really helps you get at the table with your state leaders and your county leaders if you're a county-based system, and allows you to really start implementing and creating real meaningful change. And there's kind of this value added that the workers experience by having the organization be ready to support them as they experience training. And I know there's a lot of states out there that are doing different components and different versions of organizational effectiveness, but it's really being able to work with the organizations and help them continually improve is really something that training systems should own, and that training systems should be viewed by their state leaders as the group that can do that. And so I guess it's exciting work, but it's really hard work, and it takes a lot of time. As you know, Pennsylvania's been working on this since 1999, so there's no easy answers, and it really takes a lot of time and commitment and really a lot of key partnerships to be in place to make it work. Those would be some of my final thoughts. I don't know what else anyone else would like to say.
If anyone has questions, this is Lynn from the training program. If anyone has questions they think of later, there's a spot on our website where you can go to submit questions, and they'll come to the appropriate people. So if you don't have them all planned out today, we're available.
Can I ask somebody to repeat the website? This is Vivian from Arizona.
It's a www.pacwcbt.pitt.edu.
Okay, thank you.
I guess one other thing, the National Staff Development and Training Association is an organization made up of training directors and training staff for all types of public human services. But child welfare has a real strong presence in the association. And they have their institute coming up here in September, which we put the dates on the slideshow so that you could see. But there's going to be a couple of presentations that focus on this topic specifically. One will be a panel that will have Jerry Sopko from Pennsylvania on it, in addition to Teresa Turner from North Carolina, John Vogel from Massachusetts, and Donna Stevens-Jackson from Texas. And I know, Susan, aren't you doing, you and Jerry are doing a panel as well, correct, on this topic?
Yes, we are.
Okay. So there will be some presentations at that event as well that you could, you know, really spend a lot more time talking and meeting with not only Pennsylvania folks but other states that are engaging in this work. And I think Minnesota will be engaging in some work like this down the road as well. So, you know, Dick might have some things to offer down the road as well.
Excellent. Excellent. I really want to thank Kathy and Kathy for bringing along Mary Rose, Jerry, and John, and Lynn, and other names that I won't remember. This has been just a phenomenal call. I know that every time I listen to Kathy talk about the work that so many people did in Pennsylvania, it inspires me to think about areas where other states could begin to build and think in a new way. So I'm sure there'll be a lot of movement after this call. I'm sure your website will get a lot of hits, and I know many of the people on this call are planning on going to the NSDTA conference in Atlanta at the end of the month, and I hope that we can have some face-to-face conversations, as Kathy's suggesting, on this topic. So thank you so much for sharing your information with us. Before we sign off today, I want to kind of get a sense from the group about a suggestion that we had come up with on a call a couple of months ago. Many of you will remember that we had a call in January with Anita Barbie, who talked about training evaluation, and she gave us some excellent handouts and advice and suggestions and approaches. And I have heard from many of you that you want more discussion on this topic. And I had an opportunity to talk with some people from CalSWEC, which is the California Social Work Education Center at UC Berkeley School of Social Welfare, and they're interested in coming on with perhaps Michelle Graff, who you know has been very active in this network and has done a presentation or two for us recently, and talking about some alternative methods for training evaluation. And I wanted a sense of the group. Is that something that the group wants to hear more about, different ways of thinking about and applying training evaluations?
Absolutely.
Yes.
Hi, this is Maida Nunez from New York City.
Yes.
We definitely will be interested in that topic.
Okay, great. Then let me, I'm assuming this is unanimous because all I heard were yeses all over the place. I will then would be happy to talk with the folks from CalSWEC and see if we can book them in to our next call, which quarterly call, which would be sometime in early December or January, depending on schedule. So let's plan then on doing something on training evaluation. And I think that will be a good topic for us to refocus on, because I know as I travel around the country, it is a hot topic, and one that people are very interested in knowing more about. The other topic that has surfaced over and over again has been transfer of learning. It came up today, and I'm thinking that perhaps we need to spend some time talking about that after we've had the call on training evaluation. Is that also the sense of the group, that we could spend some time talking about transfer of learning and who's doing what in the field that's working?
Yes.
Okay, good. So we have a couple of things lined up. Just in case the training evaluation one, I can't get it scheduled in time, I will work on the transfer of learning, but those will be in our list. And with that, again, I would definitely want to say thank you very much to Kathy, to Mary Rose. Mary Rose, I'm hoping to meet you down in Atlanta.
I'm planning on it.
Good. And Jerry, I'm looking forward to our presentation. And John, are you going to be in Atlanta?
Nope, I wasn't invited for that trip.
Okay, well, I'll meet you at another time. But many thanks to all of you, and Kathy, I look forward to seeing you there, and I really, really, really appreciate not only this call, but just how generous the folks from Pennsylvania have always been with all of us on sharing their expertise around child welfare training. So thank you. Keep up the good work, and I appreciate everyone being on our call today. Don't forget, you can download the audio file off the NRC's website, which is www.nrcoi.org, and the audio file of this call will probably be available within a day or two. So thank you very much.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you.